Hey everyone, it's MBM.
A good way to start a show. Cracking over Steve Weiser, I guess we can call it. Welcome to this special edition of MBM Wrestling, ladies and gentlemen, and all-round wrestling nerds. If you guys were listening to our last show, I, Ben, the B of MBM, suggested we do a quick recording this week, looking back at an old pay-per-view, courtesy of WWE Network, and that's what we're going to do a little bit later on, because with me, as always, and not in the Wayne's World way where I'm painting them as my performing monkeys, well, maybe Michael. Mansa, how are you?
I'm all right. How you doing, brother?
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good. Mike, how are you?
I am good. Good, good, good.
Have you put the Eve Marie blow-up doll back in the closet?
I never had one to start with.
Uh-huh. The lady doth protest too much, methinks. Before we jump into Starrcade 91 Battle Bowl, something fairly major has happened this week on the WWE's Tour of Europe.
Yeah.
Which is Wednesday night in a live event in Dublin, Ireland. WWE World Heavyweight Champion Seth Rollins was trying to perform a sunset flip powerbomb from the top rope through a table on someone. I can't remember who it was.
It was Kane.
Against Kane?
Okay. Yep, against Demon Kane.
And he tore his right ACL, MCL, and meniscus.
Yeah.
And he's going to be out 3 to 6 months.
Did they update it? Because last I heard it was 6 to 9.
6 to 9, yeah.
Yeah, but this is WWE.
Oh, yeah. That is true.
So they will force him to come back early.
Yeah. That's big.
That's big, right? Like
enormous with his momentum as champion, because honestly, I did not expect him, because of course now this is forcing him to drop the championship, but I did not expect him to lose the belt until either end of this year or Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Very, very beginning of next year. So to have him lose that so soon is like, wow. Well, not soon, but to have him lose it before the end of the year is wow.
Well, having him lose it the way he lost it in general is just...
Well, he's not losing it. That's the problem. He's stripped.
Yeah. So he can actually go with that as a storyline when he comes back, that he's never lost a championship. That he's whoever's a champion, that's rightfully his belt going forward. I mean, that's a storyline that writes itself. But still for him to be stripped. And then who do you have to take over? Because we know there's a... It was said that there will be a tournament.
Yes, they've announced a tournament. Whether that means a 4-man tournament, an 8-man tournament, a 16-man tournament.
Yeah.
Whether women are involved. I just really want... Like, part of me is giggling on the inside.
Yeah.
Because while I'm really, 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 really sad for Seth Rollins, it's kind of amusing for WWE to be forced into the position that TNA voluntarily put themselves in.
Yeah.
And be doing it better.
Well, yeah. See, the interesting thing exactly. is that, according to the one thing that I saw, is that the tournament's only going to be at Survivor Series.
Right. Which means it's going to be, if we assume eight people, it's three matches in a night.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which completely scuppers pretty much anything else except for this Bray Wyatt match that they're setting up. Right?
Yeah.
And which logically leads me to believe that the other two people in it's going to be Undertaker and Kane and a tag team. Because mm-hmm. a tag team won't be involved in the world title tournament.
Yeah.
Right. But
if everything goes the way it's, if everything goes in order, well, it'll probably be Undertaker and Kane and the Dudleys.
That's
they're
what
not
I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah. And against the Wyatts, because they're not involved in a feud, and that takes them out of the picture.
All right, so here's the question. Who do you put in the world title tournament?
Cesaro.
Well, yeah, Cesaro. You know Reigns. That's a
yeah,
given.
Yeah, Reigns is in there. Ambrose, I would put
there
in
is
there.
A very, very interesting piece of storyline development here for Roman Reigns, if they choose to take it.
How so?
Because every single time he's gotten a world title shot and earned a world title shot, he's then had to fight to be in that world title shot.
That is very true.
Because he had to do it against Brock Lesnar.
He had to do it against
Brock. He had to beat Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
He had to beat three people on the same night to get into Money in the Bank.
Yep.
And now he's having to go through three people on the same night to win a title shot. Or he has to go through two people on the same night to get to the final, which is effectively the title shot he earned already through
the other tournament.
Exactly.
So there's a very interesting kind of thing they could do here if they choose to go that way with Roman Reigns.
And honestly, it's like, going back to people who we would probably expect to see in the tourney.
I'm not saying who would you expect, I'm saying who would you put?
Who would I put? I mean, definitely Cesaro, Ambrose, Reigns. Those are top three right off the bat. I put Owens in because you know he put up a hell of a match.
Even though we're expecting to see Owens versus
Ryback? Oh, wait, that's right. Yeah. Well, yet again, keep in mind, they did say with this injury to Rollins that the entire card, with the exception of the Wyatt-Taker one, the entire card can change.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So even the Intercontinental title match may not even happen at Survivor Series. Because
mm-hmm.
then even that way they can get Ryback into the title picture
yep.
for the tournament.
Which is awful, but it's very true.
But we'll have to wait for Raw to see what they actually say. Because that's the only way we're going to find out.
Yeah. Still, it's very interesting how this could go. I mean, this could be... The actual King of the Ring tournament.
And you know what? I want to throw this out there. You know, we're about to do Starrcade 91, Battle Bowl, Lethal Lottery.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they start with Monday Night Raw this Monday?
It's exactly what I said about the last tournament, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, and that's why I'm bringing it back up. Because this is the best time to actually do it, to actually get, like, 20 guys, 40 guys in there.
Mm-hmm.
The issue with that, right, is they don't have 20 or 40 eligible guys right now. Really.
Unless they pull from...
Especially if you take out the 8 men for the Survivor Series match.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have 40 dudes. And if they put those people for that Survivor Series match in matches, it's obvious they're going to lose. Right? I'm looking at the... I'm just looking over the roster, right? And... I just can't. Like... If you take out the 8 people that we're expecting on the Survivor Series match, right?
Yeah.
Take out Rusev because he's injured.
Take out Cena due to time off.
Though they are saying he might appear on Monday.
I was about to say he might end up coming back for this because of the fact that.
He might even go out in the first round. I mean, it just
yeah
like.
And then Orton's out due to injury.
Orton's out due to four things at once. It just so happens he's injured at the same time. Mm-hmm. The logic, I mean, you're looking at Cesaro, and I'm trying to go without champions here, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it was me, I'd call in Jericho.
Oh, yeah. Jericho definitely would have to be up.
Ziggler.
Yeah.
And I'm trying not to put champions in here. Barrett.
Yeah.
What about Sheamus?
I would not put Sheamus in. Because I would have him cash in on the winner.
I would still have him in and still yet cash in on the winner.
No.
Because even though being knocked out, you would think he's gone and it'd still be the surprise of him cashing in. Because he still does have that.
Yeah, but, right? If you have him come down the aisle with the Money in the Bank briefcase earlier in the night, it's less of a shock. It's the showmanship side of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'd put Neville in there.
Okay, that's five.
They're going to put Ryback in there, that's six.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put Stardust in there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Seven.
And I would either put Kyla Breeze, because of the feud with Ziggler.
Uh-huh.
Or Brock Lesnar.
Ooh. Brock Lesnar.
If they can get Brock to wrestle that many times in one night.
That's right. That is
without
true.
Literally killing somebody. Yeah. But yeah, I think that is the lineup I might go with. I'd kind of want to, like, if it wasn't the world title, I'd probably work, like, Jack Swagger in there. I'd work Damien Sandow in there.
Mm-hmm.
Curtis Axel.
I'd work Curtis Axel in there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, dude, like, I don't know. Put Charlotte in there. She'd win it.
Yeah, she would.
Put the world title on Natalya. I'd work Miz in there somehow if it wasn't the world title at this point. Mark Henry.
Yeah.
Hell, put the world title on Renee Young. That'd be hilarious.
The last survivor.
But yeah, I don't know. They're in a weird spot.
Mm-hmm.
But you know they're going to put Del Rio in there. You know they're going to
put
Kevin Owens in.
They're going to put Owens in.
They're probably going to put either all three or one member of the New Day in there.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say the New Day will get involved.
Ambrose.
We already said Ambrose.
Ambrose. Triple H.
Well, actually, this just kind of popped in my mind real quick. With Roman Reigns, why couldn't they set it up?
Why did you say Roman Reigns' name?
No. Hold on. I'm thinking Roman Reigns real quick. The tournament that they're going to do on Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Why not they have it set up where the winner of that tournament has to face Roman Reigns because he's already earned.
Because it's a better story.
It is a better story to have him
Go through another test.
Like, it have Roman Reigns say that. Like, what do you mean I gotta go through another thing?
Have I not proven myself enough already?
Already? Yeah, at this point.
I won the Royal Rumble. I beat you, Daniel Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
I won your damn... I beat three people to get the Money in the Bank. And the only person that took away was Bray Wyatt, who I literally killed in Hell in the Cell, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And now I go through one tournament just to get into another one, and all the people that I beat from the other tournament are in this.
In this one,
get out of town.
Yeah, that's your story right there.
That's the promo he needs to cut on Monday.
Yeah,
that's the promo. And if he cuts it right, the crowd will eat that shit up.
Mm-hmm.
The fanboy in me realizes there have been rumors about the return of Goldust.
Ooh, yeah.
And I'm just saying it would be nice to have him in the tournament.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Because Goldust.
It's Goldust.
Because Goldust.
So Mansell, what would you do differently from my little lineup?
Like I was saying about Sheamus, I would have him in a tournament and then have him knocked out and then come back and cash it in. To go against, be like, all right, yeah, I'm out, but I'm still going
to
do this.
Dude, what if he cashes in to make the final a triple threat?
Yeah.
Like, he's not in the tournament.
Like, yeah, he cashes
in to make the final.
To make the final a triple threat. I would totally be into that, too.
Because it would be a really unique way of cashing in.
Right. That would be good.
So, I guess the question is, who do we see walking out at the end of Survivor Series WWE World Heavyweight Champion?
Either Reigns or Sheamus.
Massa?
Nope, I don't see Sheamus at all as champion. Right now I'm going with Reigns, but I have to see who's in the tournament.
Well, just give me... We will talk about it when we record next time, next Friday.
Yeah, but like I said, right now, I would have to go with Reigns. But I would still have to see who's in the tournament.
All right.
Yeah. But right now, Reigns is my answer.
Okay.
Yep.
And for those of you wondering, for me, the answer is Renee Young.
I still think, yeah, she might sneak in and get it.
If Molly Holly can be hardcore champion, Renee Young can be WWE World Heavyweight.
Telling you, man.
Yep.
Telling you, man.
Yeah, man. I'm not going against that.
I genuinely, though, I think we're going to see... I don't think it will be the obvious person.
Yeah.
Because I think this might lead to... I genuinely think it might be Dean Ambrose.
Of the heel turn?
Well, no. I think because it will get an interesting dynamic between him and Roman.
It would. It would be fantastic at this point.
And a Roman-Dean final would be interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it would be exciting to see a Dean-Roman finals.
Yeah, exactly. It would be great.
I think everybody would.
Because if we remember that Fatal 4-Way match...
Yeah,
for the title, and it was like the Shield takes out Orton, and then they take out Seth, and then they just go.
And then there was just that moment where they looked at each other.
Like,
loser buys the beers. Right, loser
buys the beers.
Yeah, it was great.
So that lead into a longer form thing.
Mm-hmm.
For example, at Survivor Series, Dean Ambrose walks out champion.
Mm-hmm.
Next pay per view, Roman takes it from him. Right?
Yeah.
And now, bear in mind everything Dean went through with stealing the title and
all the mind games that he played with Seth Rollins. Yeah. With the Money in the Bank briefcase.
How devastated he looked at the end.
Mm-hmm.
To win it and then lose it to your best friend, that's the start of the heel turn.
Yeah.
That actually works very nicely.
Right, that works really good. Shoot, that's money that prints itself right there.
Dude, can I book or can I buy?
I'm just thinking about that. Damn.
So for everyone wondering why there was a silence, it's because we had to legitimately think that out. And go,
right.
That's good.
So then you have that moment the next night on Raw, right? Where Roman comes out and he's like, look, I know I went on this huge tirade, blah, 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 etc., etc., etc. And then, he's like, okay, you beat me. Okay, I get it. And he pulls the face. He pulls the face, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, but look, I need to cash in my rematch clause. Or he's like, look, I never got the thing I initially won, blah, 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 blah. And they have a... And Ambrose is like, all right, we'll have a match at whatever.
TLC.
Right, TLC. And then he loses it in a TLC match. The Lunatic Fringe loses... And that just starts him on the spiral.
Yeah.
I it writes itself.
It writes itself.
And not only that, but the good thing with it is that with Rollins... who's your top heel out, brings in Ambrose as the new, I guess, for the time being, top heel.
Well, yeah, I mean, the closest thing they have to a top heel right now is Sheamus.
I was about to say, yeah, well, yeah.
Because Rusev's out injured, and let's be honest, he's not a heel at this point. Barrett's not a heel at this point, because the moment he says the words bad news, everyone loses their minds. I mean, Stardust would be up there. Del Rio, maybe, but he works limited dates.
Plus, he's we don't know where he is. He's kind of face right now. But that could change. He's in limbo.
The only reason he's face is because he took the title off John Cena, I think.
Yeah.
I honestly think people kind of see him as neutral right now.
Well, we don't know what to think of him right now. I don't think that's the whole issue. The only I would say also, even though he's got a thing going with the Undertaker, is Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, right? I have problems seeing Bray Wyatt as the top heel right now.
Well, I have
his last like six feuds have all been about petty bollocks.
Yeah, like I don't think. I say, even though he's a heel, he's not like championship title fighting heel. Like he's a heel, but it's off in the corner somewhere. Yeah, he's not as Seth has been, as what Dean could be, as you would just said, Sheamus. Yeah, somebody that directly would fight for the title. Nah, Bray is off somewhere else, and I don't see him in that picture either right now.
So, yeah, I mean, that kind of... Ah, man, I want...
I didn't realize we were that lacking. Like,
But that's the thing, is...
Didn't we really...
We're living in a day and age where people are afraid to be a heel.
Yeah.
That
has been brought up, and I've noticed it, too. You know, if anybody has watched, I think, the Austin podcast and stuff.
Yeah.
It has been said.
People we're also living a day and age where...
with the social media.
Well, no, we're living in a day and age where WWE refuses to book an uneven feud unless your name's John Cena.
Yeah.
Like, you will very rarely see a feud that isn't almost even. Mm-hmm. Unless it's a John Cena feud.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't know. Anyway, let's get to why we're actually here. Yep. Which is Starrcade 1991. For those of you who haven't seen this, spoilers, but it was 24 years ago.
I know, right?
I watched for the first time on Monday.
Alright, so... Full disclosure, I've seen this pay-per-view so many times.
Yeah. I know.
Since the WWE Network came out, the two most watched pay-per-views for me on WWE Network are this and Royal Rumble 92.
Yeah, Royal Rumble 92. I've seen this, and this will be my actual fourth, fifth showing of watching Starrcade 91. And I'm glad, because I loved the concept.
Now, Mance and I have a...
We have a deep love.
We have a deep love for the Lethal Lottery.
Yes.
Because... My friend Mansa, our brother from another mother, Matt Carroll, along with Matt, Mansa, and I, on WWE 2K14 and 15, we would do Universe Mode together.
Mm-hmm.
We would each have our own roster. And at one of the pay-per-views, we would do a Lethal Lottery.
Yep.
And the winners that came out of it, A, you would never believe.
Oh, man. Some of that stuff actually bled into real life afterwards.
And B, the people would go on to get massive pushes in the actual game, and sometimes in reality as well.
Yeah.
The first winner of our Lethal Lottery was Justin Gabriel.
Yes.
Who then went on to become PJ Black and win the TNA World Title.
Justin Gabriel was like an MVP after he won Lethal Lottery with us.
Yeah, he then became like the hottest trade commodity that we could get.
Yep.
It
was amazing.
And then it was Zack Ryder after that.
Zack Ryder was the next one.
Who then went on to get a push with the Hype Bros, which is kind of cool. Anyway, back to actual Lethal Lottery. 1991, December 29th, from the Norfolk Scope in Norfolk, Virginia. This was the first ever Starrcade not to feature Ric Flair.
That's right.
He was currently in WWE at the time, mm-hmm. getting ready for Royal Rumble 92.
and I was 5 years old when this happened.
Wow.
Oh, I hate you.
So young.
I didn't even know this thing even happened.
Yeah.
So, there were a couple of major feuds going into this. Sting was feuding with Lex Luger at the time,
mm-hmm.
who had been paying off people to try and take Sting out. And another major feud that plays into the matches on the card was Dustin Rhodes, who you guys might know better as Goldust, was feuding with the York Foundation because they wanted to recruit him and he wouldn't do it and things like that. And he was in a rather personal situation with... Richard Morton, who you guys might know better as Ricky Morton from the Rock and Roll Express.
Right.
But that stuff will come up a bit later.
Mm-hmm.
So, the show opens with what might be the most anemic start I can remember. Because you have the Bish, you have Missy, and you have Magnum T.A., right?
Yep.
Magnum T.A., all he is there for, right? All he does all night is pull envelopes out of a tombola.
Yeah. After it spun, didn't he spin the tombola at that?
Well, that counts as part of pulling 99.
No, okay. Actually, I think Bischoff was the one who was spinning it.
He would
take out the envelope and hand it to Missy, and it was Missy's job to open it and pass it to Bischoff.
Right, that was it.
And not only that, but the audio quality with Bischoff was horrible too.
Yeah,
that isn't actually on Bischoff. That's
on the tech crew.
That's on tech. And speaking of tech, the very first thing he goes, the Battle Bowl were these 40 WCW superstars. And then the camera sits on them for another like 40 seconds.
Right, and they just like,
And then it cuts over to the ramp. Now, at the time, WCW was using the ECW style, like, walkway. It wasn't a ramp down to the ground that you got up into the ring. It was like a walkway that went straight into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
It cut over to the ramp by the entrance where all 40 of the people were thing. The curtains go up and half the pyro doesn't fire.
Right. Like, it fires once and then it fizzles and
then one side goes off.
Right.
Wow.
I bet you those superstars were enthused to be standing on that stage.
Yeah, man, they were probably afraid he was going to catch on fire. Because it just it did not work right.
And then it cuts back to
did it come back?
But comes back to Bish.
Yeah.
To the Bish. And they pull names out of the hat. And we have our first match is Marcus Alexander Bagwell and Jimmy Jam Garvin of the Fabulous Freebirds defeated Tracy Smothers of the Young Guns and Michael Hayes of the Fabulous Freebirds in 12 minutes and 45 seconds.
Yep.
In what, in my opinion, is probably the best match on the card. If not, at least the match that has the four most talented people. Because at this time, you had Marcus Bagwell. He was actually still a rookie. He had a lot of promise.
Yeah.
And he was still green. He was still learning. And he was very promising. So of the four, this is probably the best match on the card for me personally. Because it tells like four or five stories inside one match.
Yeah, I don't think it was the best match on the card for me, but it was it did tell so much in this because you had the teaming. So you had the Freebird versus Freebird.
Yep,
which that was hilarious.
Which was a great little story.
Which crowd went crazy for
right.
it, by the way.
And because everybody was waiting for it. Then you had Tracy Smothers who was being as crazy as he was,
and
but
completely refusing to tag Michael.
Right,
as
he just refused to tag, which was great.
Like even Bagwell and Gunn were like, "Just tag, we're kicking your ass."
He's like, "No." I mean, it was so many great little stories, and then of course,
I'm not sure what that dance Tracy Smothers was doing was.
I don't know,
but it's hilarious.
Right, it was a great match, very very entertaining. What did you think, Mike?
I got everything written down for me to remember.
Matt and I are doing this from memory. Like,
I've only seen this pay-per-view once, okay?
Yeah, but we've seen it like...
I need notes, okay? Mm-hmm. But for me personally, this was definitely one of the matches up on the card for me that was one of the best matches for me. It was definitely fun seeing Garvin and Hayes wrestle, and I put it in quotation marks, wrestle each other and just having fun with it.
Yeah,
and I thought Bagwell worked the match pretty well as well, and it'll be like a theme for me for a decent amount of matches. But storytelling throughout the match was amazing.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, storytelling was the best part about all of these. If it had a great story, it led to a great match, in my opinion. Yeah, not all of them did though.
The thing I really liked about this is, as I said, it didn't just tell one story. It told, like, three.
Yeah, it told, like,
because you also had the history with the young Guns and the Freebirds, which is why Tracy's mothers refused to tag in Michael Hayes.
Exactly. And it led to something later on as well, too.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Yep.
Marcus Alexander Bagwell and Jimmy Jam Garvin move on to Battle Bowl. Mm-hmm. We will explain what Battle Bowl is when we get there.
Yep.
I'm so lost. So lost. I was so lost, but we'll get to that.
Alright, so then we move into the second match.
Yep.
Which if internet legend is true, is one of the matches on the card that was randomly picked, which I doubt because of who won team.
I was about to say, for who was in the match and then who won?
You have Stunning Steve Austin and Ravishing Rick Rude, who were both members of the Dangerous Alliance.
Exactly.
Defeating Van Hammer, or Heavy Metal Van Hammer, and Big Josh. Big Josh, a.k.a. Matt Osborne, a.k.a. the original Doink.
Yep. Yep. That match was...
And just to keep things consistent, they won, Austin and Rude won with the Rude Awakening neck breaker after 12 minutes and 56 seconds.
That was because Van Hammer kept putting people in the hammerlock. Like, that was his only move. And he sucked at it. And I hate it. And I'm kidding you not watching. He did that like 90 times. I was like, what? Dude, get out. Just get out. I hate Van Hammer.
I'm going to have that moment here in the next like two matches.
Yeah.
There was a really cool moment in this, by the way, where Ravishing Rick Rude got his Samoan moment. Like, there's the big fucking storyline in wrestling history that you don't hit a Samoan in the head because they have thick skulls, right?
Right.
So Big Josh was this lumberjack-style character who had a move called the log roll, where he would basically stand on someone's stomach and run on them. So he did this to Rick Rude, and Rick Rude just stood up and pointed at his abdominal muscles.
He was like, nope.
I refuse. I disagree with your move.
I loved it. And then he tried to hit him, and it was nothing. Rick Rude was like, yep, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Please.
Put some stank on it. Like...
Oh, I loved that moment. That was a great moment.
I will, however, say this, right? I'll come back to my overall... There is an overall running thread through this pay-per-view, which I don't want either of you to let me forget talking about, right? So keep that in mind.
You want to do it before we get to Battle Bowl?
No, I want to do it, like, before we talk about Battle Bowl, but before we explain what Battle Bowl is.
Okay.
But this definitely pays into that. Okay. But yeah, it was a great moment because you had Paulie dangerously on the outside talking on his mobile phone, and you had Austin like being amazing, and you had Rick Rude being amazing, and
and then the rest of the guys were in.
And then Big Josh doing what he did a pretty good job for what
Josh did do a okay job.
And then you had Van Hammer.
Yeah, see that's
who existed.
Having Van Hammer in the ring was just like ugh.
And then you had Van Hammer, who existed.
Right.
Is there any other way you could describe him in that match?
How's that,
Mike? Can you think of a way to describe
him? I mean, I didn't really write notes on Van Hammer.
there you go.
Fair enough.
My notes was to me it was a good technical match, and watching Austin and Rude work together as a tag team was really cool. Definitely a good old school tag team match to watch. Mm-hmm. While watching Austin and Rude.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
pretty much
that was my notes for the matches. I really enjoyed watching Rude and Austin, and like the you're saying, Ben, the Samoan moment with the abs is like, come on, go for it. You push him in the ribs. He like puts his arms up behind his head.
That's
like,
the most muscular part. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, come on, punch me, man. Let's go.
Yep.
Enjoyed it. I loved it.
Oh yeah.
Then we had the third match, which is one of these storylines I talked about, because you ended up with Dustin Rhodes paired with Ricky Morton.
Yeah.
Going against Larry Zbysko with Medusa.
Mm-hmm.
Against, and his tag team partner, Elegante.
What a pairing. What an ending.
Right. When you see a match with the name Rhodes, Morton, Zbysko, and the Deuce, you think, this is going to be an awesome match, right? Wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong. wrong. You're wrong.
Not too much.
They did a good job of carrying the existing feud in, where Morton and Rose didn't work too well together. Mm. And there's some moments that should have been comedy, right? Mm. Like when Elegante stepped on Medusa's fingers at ringside, or... And I'm not even sure if that was planned.
I didn't even think that was... I don't know if that was planned either.
When, like, Zabisco was slapping him or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But it just fell flat because Giant Gonzalez screwed it up.
Yeah.
Well, for me, for this match, there was one thing that I really did enjoy, and that was I enjoyed first and foremost watching Dustin Rhodes in the match. The big thing I really loved when El Gigante got in the ring, Morton tags Dustin because I'm not dealing with this. Dustin comes in, his willingness to try to take down Giant Gonzalez was nice to watch because of the story it told itself in regards to Dustin trying to take him down. He's like, you know what? I'm going to try to take him down. He tried doing a toe hold. And that, for me, that was like one of the moments that really stood out to me in that match.
Shined in the match, yeah.
There was also a really nice moment before the match started when Zabisco was coming down and he realized who his partner was and he was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, we got you. We're going to move on.
But that match ran 5 minutes and 54 seconds.
Yep.
And if I remember rightly, they ended it with a double drop kick.
Which, yes, Giant Gonzalez threw Zabisco into them for the double drop kick.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Mike.
Yes.
Why don't you lead the discussion on this match, which is Bill Kazmaier and Jushin Thunder Liger defeating Diamond Dallas Page and Mike Graham 13 minutes and 8 seconds.
My notes are very short for this one.
For me, spectacular of a match.
For me, it was a good match. I liked watching Liger and Graham wrestle each other. This being actually the first time I ever saw Mike Graham wrestle, and the second time I've ever seen Liger wrestle, being the first time to take over Brooklyn. DDP was okay in my personal opinion in the match, but I really mostly enjoyed watching Graham and Liger.
One of the things that is worth noting here when we talk about DDP is this is when DDP was still like super green.
Yeah.
Like he was still like brand new.
Yeah, he still was young and
so really much like Bagwell before him, they both showed a lot of promise. And one of them followed through and the other one was Marcus Alexander Bagwell.
I was about to say one was became buff to stuff.
Yeah. and honestly, I thought DDP was okay, and yeah, he held his own, like, because it seemed like the match was set up that it would be Liger versus Graham, DDP versus Kazmaier, and DDP held his own.
Yes, and I really liked the fact that he played that heel, that where he's like, oh, try this, and then he got tagged in, and was like, you do it. And DDP's like, but crap.
But I just have to say, I really did enjoy seeing Mike Graham in the ring because I'd never seen him wrestle before. I mean, I've seen the documentaries and stuff like that. I've seen him talk, do Legends Wrestling, but I never had actually seen him wrestle. So that was
there are so many people that just don't know who Mike Graham is that then go watch Legends Wrestling. Then yeah. You start showing them stuff like this, they're like, that boy can go.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think they're saying that he was training Bagwell and DDP, maybe.
Yes, he was definitely doing some work with DDP.
Yeah.
I knew he was doing work with DDP. I didn't know about Bagwell.
Well, you would assume that being how he was a good training type person, you know, who his father was.
Yeah.
That maybe he would show Bagwell some tips and tricks here and there, even though he probably was focusing more on Paige.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be surprised. This was a pretty decent match. World's Strongest Man, Bill Kazmaier was there as per the strong guy.
He did have a couple of interesting double team moves with Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah,
like the Gorilla Press splash thing.
I believe the ending was, didn't he like, did Bill Kazmaier like throw Liger onto
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, like I mean, they
yeah,
they
he did. He threw him on. Yeah, he threw him onto DDP.
Yeah, for the win. Which I was like, yeah, I mean, it was a very interesting match for them, like with each component in this match. So yeah, I liked it a lot.
And not only that, but the two teams complemented each other.
Yeah, they did. You know, I didn't find too many faults in there, especially when I'm not a big Bill Kazmaier fan. I think
he did feel a little out of place.
Yeah, but even though he was like the strong man and everybody else was quicker stuff, he wasn't too out of place. Like he still did his thing. Everybody did their thing in the ring, and that's what I liked. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mass, you lead the next conversation. Which is Lex Luger and Arn Anderson with Harley Race defeating Terrence Taylor, the Tailor-Made Man, and the Z-Man.
Z-Man.
Minutes and 25.
Oh, I got some crap on this one.
5 seconds.
Yeah. Ah, oh, there's so much.
I got some crap on this one.
Really?
Yeah.
It's my second favorite match on the card.
Like, I was like, I really like this. For one, it's got the Z-Man in there.
Yep.
Oh, I absolutely
get me love Tom Zank, yo.
Yo, love him. And then you got Arn Anderson. And Terry Taylor was, I mean, everybody. You got the three technical guys doing their thing. There's Lex Luger in there, too. But Lex was not out of place.
See, that's the thing, is Lex played his part in this match really well.
Like, he was him and Arn was a fantastic tag team. And I remember when I first watched this, after years later, because be watching WCW and Arn and Luger, like, feuding and stuff, but seeing them going back in and watching this, like, wow, they were a great team, and they do well together. After Harley talked to us, I was like, wow.
Yep.
Harley talked to Arn, was like, set them up, I was like, this is a great team. But then Z-Man and Taylor were a great team. It was like, it was a great tag team, and this honestly as a match was one of my favorites. What did you? I'm kind of dying now to hear.
I kind of want to hear Mike crap on this match.
Okay, like,
okay. First and foremost, overall good match. To me, Terrence Taylor was the most impressive wrestler in this match.
Yes.
While the Z-Man was the most sloppy.
You have to understand at this point, Z-Man was wrestling with an injury.
Yeah.
Because. Now, see, I didn't know that he had an injury.
Yeah.
You know, see, watching at that time, because he botched quite a bit in that match.
Yeah.
And Luger, and then to me, Luger and Anderson, like you were saying, Manson, they meshed really, really well as a tag.
Really well.
Was
this before or after Luger was part of the Horsemen?
No, this is before.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, to me, I was impressed with three. Wasn't into Z-Man in the match. Obviously, I didn't know he was injured. But to me, he looked sloppy in that ring. And
well, yeah, you are right about that, because yeah, he did deal with injury, but that was something I knew going in, and that's insider, that's information. If you knew, I made adjustments for that, but and then it's still the Z-Man. Like I've other seen his other stuff, so I know how good he is. But that doesn't have bearing on the match. If you've seen it for the first time, you don't have all that information.
Yeah.
Right.
But overall, I still enjoyed the match. I thought Terrence Taylor was extremely impressive in that match.
I really loved
watching Luger and Arn work together. That it was just those three made that match for me.
Yeah.
It was your classic sort of enforcers versus technical guys.
It was. And with Luger hitting the attitude adjustment for the win.
The Attitude Adjustment Power Driver.
Yes, the original Attitude Adjustment. The Attitude Adjustment Power Driver. Yes.
Yet another thing that John Cena steals.
Yep.
To do with your moves.
I had to put that out there. I was like, that's right. His Power Driver was the Attitude Adjustment. I forgot about that. Yep. Great match.
Alright. So, that brings us round to where the shenanigans begin.
Yeah. We're getting into the second half and shenanigans. Yes, very much shenanigans.
We have Ricky Steamboat and Todd Champion, who is one half of the Enforcers tag? No.
No, they were the...
The Patriots. Patriots.
Yeah.
Defeating Cactus Jack and, quote-unquote, Buddy Lee Parker. Okay, so to set this up for a while, Cactus yes. Jack and Abdullah the Butcher Abdullah. Mm-hmm. had been running around as a team for a very long time. Yep. And most recently of all, they were the people that Sting had hired, sorry, that Lex had hired to try and take out Sting.
Yep.
Right? So the way that Lethal Lottery works is you aren't necessarily paired up with the people you're used to being teamed up with. So Ricky Steamboat and Todd Champion got called to the ring. And then Cactus Jack got called to the ring. And then Buddy Lee Parker got called to the ring. Except Abdullah the Butcher wanted to be Cactus Jack's tag team partner.
Right.
So he spent like 6 minutes just viciously beating Buddy Lee Parker in the back.
Just destroying him.
Just destroyed him. So Cactus Jack ended up wrestling Ricky Steamboat and Todd Champion on his own for like 5 minutes and winning most of it.
Pretty much. Because he's Cactus Jack.
Then Buddy Lee Parker starts crawling
down the ramp.
And right. the crowd starts going nuts. They're like, Buddy, Buddy, Buddy. And as he gets about like halfway up the ramp, Abdullah the Butcher comes up. And Cactus Jack assumes that Abdullah the Butcher is his partner.
Yep.
And Abdullah just lays yet more of a beatdown on Buddy, right? And then the refs finally like get him in the back.
Like, wait, you can't come out, Abdullah.
Buddy spends the next, like, 4 minutes crawling to the ring, just, like, flops down in the corner, and Cactus Jack, who was completely just, like, unscathed, just tags him in and leaves. And just leaves! And loses!
Right!
I love this match.
Buddy Lee Parker's worst night. Such a great story.
I just want to say this right now. The storyline of Parker being attacked and then Cactus Jack working the majority of this match as if it was just a series of singles matches was hilarious. I loved it.
Like Ricky Steamboat and Todd Champion were legitimately like, do you want to wait for your partner? Nah, whatever.
Right, he'll be here. Oh, it was so good.
but I also have to say, Steamboat and Cactus Jack work so well together in the ring.
They do. Yeah.
And to me, Todd Champion wasn't that bad. But I really enjoyed more Cactus versus Steamboat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Totally agree with that.
But that storyline of Buddy Lee Parker. that was great. That was wonderful. I loved it.
That then leads us
to the next one.
To Sting and Abdullah the Butcher being partnered up.
Yep.
And beating Brian Pillman and Bobby Eaton.
Beautiful Bobby. Now.
Yet another Dangerous Alliance member.
Yep.
And they beat them in 5 minutes and 55 seconds.
Now the joke of this match was Pillman and Sting at times were teaming up
against Eaton and Abdullah the Butcher.
Well, they were like, wait a minute, you guys can't do that, you're not partners. Yeah, we are right now.
They were like, we are, we won't want to die.
Right.
Since we're on that, I might as well just go into my notes because that it's on point. Definitely a very interesting match where both members of both teams don't like each other. Seeing Abdullah attacking Sting constantly, and Bobby Eaton not even caring about Pillman, and then seeing Pillman attacking Abdullah to protect Sting was just interesting as hell to watch. It was
because you have to understand that going into Battle Bowl, Sting wasn't just feuding with Lex Luger; he was also feuding with like the entire Dangerous Alliance.
He had a thing against the Dangerous Alliance, so yeah. Sting had a whole lot of enemies.
but for me, that was, in my opinion, watching it for the first time, very good storytelling in this match. because of all the chaos of like, wait, why is he? Is and then there the commentary of Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone going like, you know, this is why these guys don't like each other. It worked for me as a first time watcher.
It was a great moment when Jim Ross is like, "Where'd my pencil go?" And you realize that Abdullah the Butcher has stolen his pencil.
He's stolen his pencil
and stabbed Sting in the face with it.
Yeah. Yep.
Jim Ross starts telling a story about how sharp he keeps his pencil.
It was that was just good.
I don't even remember how this match ended, right? All I remember is that Sting gets the crap kicked out of him.
Yeah, Sting gets his butt handed to him.
I think Pillman took out Abdullah, and then Sting was able to hit his finisher on Eden.
Yeah, I think he hit the splash or something. He took out Eden for the win. And then, if I remember right, didn't Cactus Jack come out and start feuding with Abdullah at the end of this match?
Yeah, what happened is at the end of the match, Cactus Jack came out and he accidentally hit Abdullah with his Singapore cane. And that is what took Abdullah out in order to Sting to hit a Dawson Cross. I want to point out, Sting had the crap kicked out of him for 4 or 5 minutes.
Yep.
And he was still strong enough to jump off the top rope with a high cross body, which was good enough to beat and barely touched
Bobby
Eaton.
Yep. That's I totally remember this now, yep. Because Sting was Super Sting during that time.
Yep.
He was Super Sting.
But yeah, suffice to say, Sting pretty much had to be carried out of the ring.
And yet,
the eighth match.
Yeah, no, what was anything else? Mm-hmm.
Was the team of Rick Steiner and the Night Stalker. Who replaced the injured Diamond
Stud,
a.k.a. Scott Hall.
Yep.
And you may know the Night Stalker a little bit better as Adam Bomb.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't good then, and he wasn't good as Adam Bomb.
No.
It's probably why they put Bomb in his name, because he bombed.
Pretty much.
A Tom Fish. Anyways.
And that was a... Anyway, it was... Rick Steiner and the Night Stalker against Big Van Vader and Mr. Hughes. Guess which team won?
I'm not going to lie. It was an okay match. It really didn't hold my attention.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever enjoyed a match Mr. Hughes has ever been involved in.
Well, because he's stiff and he doesn't do anything. Like, he's better as standing on the outside, just grimacing into the camera. That was his like best thing, and then arbitrarily hitting somebody.
And like for me, I like seeing Rick Steiner.
Yeah. Like, cause hello.
No, we're good. Keep going.
Okay. Sorry. Anyway, so like Steiner beat the snot out of Mr. Hughes, but that was about the whole thing in a match. Vader just dominated, and it really wasn't a match after that.
And for me, like, honestly, and just for a moment, it's just Mance and I for a moment. You know, for me, it was just Steiner was the only one who really kept my attention going.
Yeah.
And, like, Night Soccer was just, like, kind of like with Van Hammer. He was just there.
He was there and lost. Like, yeah. I didn't, like, seeing the Night Soccer was, like, okay. I don't know. And Rick didn't even trust him. They even brought that up in the match. It was like, you can tell. Rick was like, look, I'll tag you in maybe later sometime.
And he was just about maybe up. Next week I'll tag you into the match.
Right. Like, maybe,
but not only that, but I mean, I'm not going to knock on Vader either, because honestly, it was Vader and Steiner that was the match, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And... It just didn't hold my attention very well, and yeah, not much more to say about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. overall, not a great match.
No, it wasn't.
Which leads us on to the ninth match, which I like to call the "Let's Put Scott Steiner Over" a match.
It really was.
Which is Scott Steiner and Firebreaker Chip.
Nice name.
Defeating, he's the other half of the Patriots tag team, by the way.
Yep.
Defeating Johnny B. Bad, better known as Mark Marrow, and Arachnoman.
An even better name.
Who was basically a man wearing a really bad Spider-Man Halloween outfit.
Yeah, like, it was awful Spider-Man costume.
I honestly wanted to... Ben, you know how you want to punch yourself in the face every time?
And that match went 11 minutes and 16 seconds.
Now, Ben, you know how you like to punch yourself in the face when you thought of Ryback as Intercontinental Champion? Arachnoman did that to me.
Well, see, there's a difference between the two, right? Arachnoman, I'm 90% sure it was just kind of created for one, maybe two TV appearances. Ryback's over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he is over.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Ryback.
But this match was mediocre. It was another match that I just didn't really...
It was literally the put Scott Steiner over match.
Because Firebreaker Chip was doing his best as...
Firebreaker Chip did all the selling.
He was selling, but he's also doing as much of the technical work. And then he tags in Scott Steiner, who becomes Brock Lesnar. If you understand what that means, he just dominates.
Suplexed the entire building.
Right, he goes and takes everybody to Suplex City. Tags out, Firebreaker Chip tries to go back in, and he's not Firebreaker Chip, not even a small guy. But he gets beat up, and then he tags back out, and then Brock Lesnar comes back in. I'm like, oh my gosh, what? And you see Scott there like, what's wrong?
And all you can hear is, come on, Chip!
Yeah. Yeah, that was it.
Let's just move on to the last of the tag team
match. All right, the last of the tag team matches, the 10th match, which was Ron Simmons and Tommy Rich versus Steve Armstrong and PN News. And Ron Simmons and Thomas Rich won that one in 12 minutes and 1 second.
I'll definitely say this. It was a better match than the last two.
Yeah. And even with Ron Simmons and Tom Rich trying to figure out how to work with each other, it was much better. That was a story in itself. That was a great story.
Yeah, it was a good match, but it was definitely better than the last two we just talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
The interesting thing here is the Ron Simmons Thomas Rich team. There was a lot of talk going into the match that you would have the people going into the 10th match having a disadvantage in Battle Bowl
because
they'd get no rest.
Right.
So that was the quote unquote story there.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't even do.
No.
It didn't do a whole lot. Simmons won that with his god awful spine buster.
Mm-hmm.
He's apparently given to Ryback. Now, the point I wanted to make before we talked about Battle Bowl, is if you look back across this this card, you will not see a tag team match. You will only see one tag team match with one Hall of Famer in it. Every other one has... you'll see one with one Hall of Famer. And every other tag team match has one, at least two, sometimes three, even up to five, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Hall of Famers.
Yep.
In my opinion, first ballot Hall of Famers.
First ballot Hall of Famers.
Because you have the Free Birds in the first match and Tracy Smothers, in my opinion. You have Austin Rude, and Doink will probably go in at some point.
Yep. Plus, not you got, and then Harley Race was on the outside.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Not for that match.
Not that one.
Heyman was on the outside.
Yeah, Heyman.
A guaranteed Hall of Famer at this point. Yep. You had Dustin Rhodes, Ricky Morton, Larry Zbysko, Medusa.
Yep.
You had Jushin Thunder Liger, DDP, and Mike Grant. You had Luger, Arn Anderson, Race, Terry Taylor, and Z-Man, all of whom, in my opinion, belong in the Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Steamboat, Cactus Jack, Sting, Abdullah the Butcher, Brian Pillman, Bobby Eaton, all four of them Hall of Famers. Vader, Rick Steiner, Hall of Famers. Scott Steiner, Hall of Famer. Ron Simmons, Steve Armstrong, Hall of Famers. Thomas Rich, Hall of Famer.
I'm doing a count here real quick. One, two.
Yeah.
Three, four, five, six, seven. Seven of the people who wrestled in the tag team tournament, seven are actually currently in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Yep. Out of 40.
Yep.
Now, I think that, again, that was going through who I think deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And anyone who comes up to me and says Scott Steiner doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame never saw the Steiner brothers wrestle.
How would you ever say Scott Steiner did not deserve to be in the Hall of
Fame? On his singles career, he did not deserve it.
Oh, but
as Steiner brothers, yeah.
Dude!
Because I actually did watch...
Steiner brothers!
Because leading up to WrestleMania 31, I was trying to do all WrestleManias in 31 days, which I failed. And
well, you had an excuse.
But well, yeah, at the time I was also
jaw surgery.
Yeah, it was jaw surgery. I needed something to do. And then I went back to work, and that screwed it all up. But I got to watch Steiner Brothers wrestle at WrestleManias, and they were damn good as a tag team. And I would agree with your assessment on that as the Steiner Brothers Hall of Fame.
And anybody who comes at me and says Rick Steiner doesn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame solo doesn't know who the Varsity Club are.
I was just about to say that too. Like, damn, the Varsity Club. How you not say that? Oh, Steiner Brothers definitely. Rick definitely with both Varsity and
Steiner Brothers.
Plus, Steiner is just Rick Steiner. He's a badass.
Yeah.
Doc is Gremlin was the talent of the Steiner Brothers.
Really was.
Scotty was the power.
And going back, I think Luger deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
I think he'll go in eventually.
Hall of Fame. Arn Anderson already is. Harley Race already is. I think Terrence Taylor is already in.
I don't think so.
Question mark. If he's not, he deserves it.
Yeah.
And I think Tom Zenk deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
So do I.
Especially with a lot of his work in like Stampede and everything. Mike Graham deserves Hall of Fame. DDP deserves Hall of Fame. Liger deserves Hall of Fame.
Oh, you know DDP is going to go in probably in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, probably.
Especially with the stuff that he's doing now with Jake the Snake Roberts and Scott Hall.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how he's essentially saved those two guys. You know he's going to get his due in the next 2 to 3 years.
Medusa's already in. Zbysko's already in. Ricky Morton. Well, Rock and Roll Express deserves. I think they, Rock and Roll Express, I think, already in.
I think the Express isn't.
Dustin. If it's got Rhodes in its name, put it in the Hall of Fame already.
Pretty much.
Austin. Rick Rude. Doink. The Freebirds. Like, come on. This is a stacked card.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that was the point I was trying to say. I was saying just how much talent WCW had at this point in its career. Yeah. And it didn't have Ric Flair.
Yep.
It carried itself.
Yeah.
It did. It really did.
Which leads us to Battle Bowl. Now, before... Each of the winning teams So that's Marcus Bagwell, Jimmy Garvin, Steve Austin, Rick Rude, Dustin Rhodes, Ricky Morton, Bill Kazmaier, Jushin Thunder Liger, Lex Luger, Arn Anderson, Ricky Steamboat, Todd Champion. Sorry, I'm getting the beer burps.
Okay.
Sting, Abdullah the Butcher, Big Van Vader, Mr. Hughes, Scott Steiner, Firebreaker Chip, Ron Simmons, and Tommy Rich. Wildfire Tommy Rich. All qualified for Battle Bowl.
Yep.
Which is a two-ring battle royal.
and should we note that throughout the night, rotating rings for the tag matches.
Yeah. There have been two rings set up the whole night. Yep. And they've gone from one ring to the other. So for some tag team matches, you've had to walk through one ring to get to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, this is a two-ring battle royal. And when you get eliminated from the first ring, you have to start wrestling in the second ring. If you get eliminated again, you are out.
Yep.
I was so good. See, first off, as I mentioned at the very beginning of when we started talking about Battle Bowl, I was confused because they're saying you had to get thrown over the top rope and into the second ring.
Yes.
To get eliminated from the ring.
You cannot be eliminated from Battle Bowl by being thrown over the top rope and to the floor in the first ring.
There's
only one section of ropes you can go through.
Yeah.
But the thing that made it funny was that it's like they said that you have to get put over the top rope and then into the second ring. And I'm looking at it and they're like, you see guys just throwing each other underneath the bottom rope, or the top rope, I mean.
Yeah.
And then going into the second ring, he has been eliminated from the first
ring. Yeah, he's been eliminated.
What? I thought he said it was over the top rope. Come on, you just got thrown under the bottom.
They're like, whatever.
You're so confusing to me.
And basically what happens is when it's down to one person in the first ring, they get to sit around and wait and not do anything and rest, right? And then it comes down to the last person in the other ring, and then they have a traditional over-the-top rope, both feet hit the floor,
mm-hmm.
winner takes all.
Now, right? This was another thing where I got confused, because you had two rings set up.
Yes.
Did it have to stay in that first ring? Because they never clarified that.
Well, they probably didn't think that way.
Yeah, I don't think they
Because I was thinking they could have that match just go through all both rings.
They'll go back and forth.
Yeah. And they just kept in the one ring. And I'm like thinking to myself, well, so if they throw so-and-so over into the second ring, what all happens then?
So the last four in the first ring were Sting, Rick Rude, Lex Luger, and Big Van Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sting and Rude eliminate each other from the first ring, and then Vader starts dominating Luger. But Luger then clotheslines Vader, and he becomes the last person in the first ring.
Yep.
And I think he was the only person to get actually knocked over the top rope into the second ring.
And in a moment of extreme predictability,
mm-hmm.
Sting, who I would like to point out had to pretty much be carried out of his previous match.
Yep.
Becomes the last person in the second ring. He's then at a massive disadvantage because Luger's been resting for like 5-10 minutes here.
Right. Just chilling out.
And he just kicks Luger's ass.
Yep. And Luger at this time was the world champion, right?
Yeah.
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 And like Sting's just like, yeah, lol, spoiler, I win.
Exactly. The original LOL spoiler I win.
and that led to Sting winning Battle Bowl, right? Yep. Which we find out later was like a big thing, and they got money in a Super Bowl style ring and whatever.
They got a ring, got money, got all kind of
cool. And as a result of winning the Battle Bowl, Sting was later awarded a match against Lex Luger, which he won,
mm-hmm.
because lol.
Spoiler alert, I win.
Right. Spoiler alert,
right after that, Luger left WCW.
Yep.
and went to the quote-unquote WBF,
mm-hmm.
which is the World Bodybuilding Federation. And Sting went on to continue his feud with Rick Rude and the Dangerous Alliance, which ended in the War Games match at WrestleWar.
That's right.
In which Sting wins again, lol.
Yep, he about to say he won that one.
Because lol.
Because I'm Sting.
And I'm not talking about League of Legends.
Yep.
I mean, for me, overall, I thought the concept was very interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. As you guys know, I was very confused with stuff, as I stated.
It's actually not that hard to understand if you have a brain.
Well, I mean, as the match went on, I started figuring things out. It's like, oh, okay, so it's like this. But it's like, watching it for the first time...
Yeah, there were a lot of mistakes.
No, I figured it out when I watched it the first time.
But there were a lot of mistakes that were made and what they said and it was happening. And they just let it go.
Yeah.
I think I got it at that point because also got to look at time. Like, it was... It ran under 3 hours, but I think there was still a time restraint, too. So they were like, yeah, whatever. Let's go. We have this the way it's supposed to go.
But for me, there's also good storytelling throughout this match because... There are also the multiple storylines, you know, the Marcus Alexander Bagwell being in there,
yep.
you know, stunning Steve Austin's being in there because he was final four in the second ring, you yep. know, so you had a lot of other stories that were being told throughout this that was not just Lex and Sting.
Oh, yeah.
And the final battle between Sting and Luger, in my opinion, was well done because it wasn't all Sting in the beginning. Luger did hammer the crap out of him in the very beginning portion.
And he still came back.
And right. then, yeah, and then Sting came back. But to me, it was well done because, and this is actually credit to Tony Schiavone and Jim Ross, they sold it.
Yeah.
They sold that story very well with what was going on in the ring. And that was in my opinion.
There is one, speaking of Tony Schiavone.
I love how he kept pressing the microphone to his
mouth. That's exactly what I was about to say.
You want to say that?
He would literally just press the microphone into his mouth.
Right.
And Jim Ross would look at him like, are you an idiot?
Right. Can you stop that?
I'm not going to lie. You
hit the head by a horse when you were a kid.
I'm not going to lie. Listening to Jim Ross in 91 compared to when I started listening to JR in late 2000...
Uh-huh.
It was so, it's so different.
Well, yeah.
It really is.
91 with Jim Ross. What you got, when you started listening
to JR.
Oh, JR. Yeah, which is the character. And so it's different. It's a different, he was a different commentator.
It was a different feel.
Yeah, it's because it's commentating for different people.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, JR has said, there were very specific things placed on him in WCW that he could and could not do.
Right.
Whereas the WWE just went, yeah, here's a microphone.
Yeah, here's the mic.
Jim Ross went, okay. Right. Hey. Best announced forever.
Hey. No F-bombs, no S-bombs. Go do your thing. Oh, okay.
Have fun. He's like, cool. Okay. Anyway, let's wrap up this special. We're sitting here in a week where Bill Goldberg has compared his acting career to The Rock.
The only good movie Goldberg's ever done was that Santa Claus movie where he's killing everybody.
Oh my god.
I didn't even know he did that.
No, that was the movie he did. That's the movie he did leading into WrestleMania 20.
Wow.
Because he was wearing the t-shirt when he screwed Lesnar out of the title and Guerrero won.
Damn.
In a week where in her second match in NXT, God Awful Mask Woman defeated someone from the main roster.
Wow.
And we're here in a week where at the launch of the Road to WrestleMania at Cowboys Stadium, we did not see the Raw roster. We did not see the SmackDown roster. We saw the NXT roster.
I'm actually
okay. And yes, I know the Raw and SmackDown rosters are in Europe, but I'm making a point.
Yep.
That picture of Ty Dillinger in the ring at AT&T Stadium.
Doing the tan. Literally yep. Everyone.
Yep. I would have been doing it.
Well, no, there's a black and white picture that Ty Dillinger tweeted, and I think I retweeted it on our Twitter account. It's a black and white picture of him just sitting in the ring in Cowboy Stadium. And I forget what the quote is, and then I think Triple H might have quoted the tweet saying that this is what dreams are made of, something like that. And that picture alone tells you what these guys in NXT are working for.
Yeah. Was the stadium empty?
Yeah, it was an empty stadium.
Oh, man. That's hot. Oh, see. But having NXT represent like that, yeah, I'm okay with that. Totally okay with that.
Yeah. It's a definite... and the thing you're looking for is those moments.
Mm-hmm.
Is what the...
Oh, that's what it was.
It's what the title was. And he's like sitting on the top rope, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, I don't know. Like I said, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. That is definitely prepared for it.
If you look last year at WrestleMania, there was only one match on the card that didn't have an NXT graduate in it.
Mm-hmm.
Will there be any this year?
Wow.
Will there be any matches on the card that don't have an NXT graduate in them?
Yeah, that's the question. I don't know.
If Triple H has a match.
Yeah, unless Triple H
and
is
maybe
Taker. Undertaker.
Yeah.
That's the only one I can see.
But Triple H can still wrestle an NXT graduate.
Yeah. Like, who's to say that Triple
Taker could still end up wrestling like Samoa Joe?
Yeah. Like, who's to say that Triple H couldn't wrestle a Baron Corbin or somebody like that? Or a Bray Wyatt. Or Finn Balor. Yeah, or Finn Balor. Wow. Seth Rollins. I mean,
Seth shouldn't be back for me.
I know.
See, here's the thing. I did the math on Seth. If it's the 6 to 9 that they're all saying it is,
oh yeah, it's
6 months... is WrestleMania on the date of when his injury happened. Nine months is the month before SummerSlam.
Yeah.
So we're calling it here, Shield reuniting at WrestleMania? Is that what you're saying?
No.
Yeah. Oh.
No, I'm just saying, if it's 6 months, he comes back at WrestleMania as a surprise. If it's 9 months,
they
may hold him off a 10th month, so he's SummerSlam.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking. His big return will be SummerSlam.
And we are here in a week where the Boogeyman signed a Legends contract with the WWE.
God, wow.
Didn't Tatanka also sign a Legends deal?
That was a long time ago, dude. Yeah. The other person this week was Superstar Billy Graham.
Yeah, I saw the little headline for that.
And we are here in a week where WWE Breaking Ground continued to prove to me that 90% of the people in NXT are Goran delusional.
Yeah.
So with that, we will start to wrap up. Mansa, anything you want to promote and or tell people where they can find you?
As always, you can find myself and Matt Carroll, who we mentioned earlier on our Two Fat Guys podcast. That is number 2 Fat Guys. Two Fat. Libsyn.com.
And are you done?
Yeah, because you'll probably end up saying what the other thing I was going to say. Go ahead.
And Michael?
And you can follow me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75 and at Experience Hockey. Next episode's coming up tomorrow. I'll actually be recording live at the Tilted Kilt in Frederick, Maryland. I also have an interview with a player from the Buffalo Buttes of the National Women's Hockey League as well, which I recorded yesterday. Nice. And of course, Ben, you're going to tell us, tell everyone where we're going to be these next 2 weeks.
I will. Next week, we will be at the MCW event in Joppa, Maryland.
Sure will.
Which is going to be a hell of a show.
They just announced the main event today, too.
Yep, which is going to be the current Rage champion, Michael.
It's the current Rage champion, Brandon Scott, versus the new MCW champion.
I don't even get to talk when I'm hosting. It's great.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Michael. Even though you said I was going to tell people where we will be found.
Go ahead, Mike. Finish it up.
And the new champion, King Ryan McBride. Which we've already gotten some banter on Twitter with both of them.
Yeah.
Do you want to plug my stuff too, Michael?
No, Ben, go for it.
Okay. And the week after that, you will be able to find MBM Wrestling at Virginia Comic Con at the Richmond International Raceway Saturday and Sunday. We're going to be all over the paneling, which is going to be really, really cool. And I will let you guys know now that the panel for MBM Live will be taking place on Sunday between 12 and 1 p.m.
Very nice.
So there you go. We will be recording live, hopefully, if everything works out. If there is one thing that we have all learned about recording live, it's that the best play plans of mice and men never survive contact with the enemy. So that's that. And as for me, you can find more about me at Pop Culture Uncovered, popcultureuncovered.com. I've been guesting on a couple of the podcasts for the main cast recently, but I do also host the more interview-focused show. It's a rarer show, but it's called Pop Culture Uncovered Declassified, whereas the main show is kind of a catch-all sort of situation. Declassified is more of an interview and very in-depth look at a specific topic. So that's a lot of fun. Now, that being said, you can also find me at 321, which is three guys, three drinks, two guys, one topic. We will be coming off hiatus soon here, now that Jordan has got himself settled. I would expect for us to be recording our first episode of season 3 this coming week, because this weekend is BlizzCon.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing Jordan and I are, it's horrific Blizzard fanboys. So yeah, that's the show. Any final thoughts on Starrcade 91, Mansa?
I love the concept of Lethal Lottery. I think it's a concept that actually should have been adopted by the WWE. There's several storylines they could have told. But yeah, that was it, man. Starrcade 91 bringing that out was an amazing thing. Thank you, Eric Bischoff.
Eric Bischoff wasn't in control.
That was Jim Herd.
Yeah. Oh, that was Jim Herd.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim Herd.
Bischoff was just on air talent.
I just thought he was, yeah, that's right, he was just on air talent.
Yeah, remember, now. Bischoff wasn't the boss now. Until about 2 years later.
Yep.
Go ahead, Mike.
Any final thoughts about the Starrcade Lethal Lottery that do not involve comparing everybody on it to Eva Marie?
I gave the show a 4 out of 5. I enjoyed it greatly. I love the Lethal Lottery. Like Mansa said, I love to see WWE adopt it. There's so much that can be done with it. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked it.
And as for me, my final thoughts on the Lethal Lottery are as follows. It started out badly, it got really strong after that, and then it kind of petered off at the end. The Luger AA Tom Zenk Terrence Taylor match is a really good match to watch. Mm-hmm. The first tag team match is a really good match to watch. And please check out the Buddy Lee Parker shenanigans.
Yes. Very much.
And with that, we will speak to you next week, MBMers. See you later.